Welcome to Mrigashira. I'm in conversation with Parijat Ghosh, Team Coordinator Research and Advocacy at Pradhan, and Sudha Singh, CEO of The Purpose Room. And we are discussing the most pertinent topic of gender-sensitive communications. Hey Sudha, hi Parijat. Welcome to Mrigashira. It's great to have you guys here. I just wanted to talk to you guys about gender-sensitive communication. What prompted you to get into an area like this?
Thank you, Radha, for inviting us in your podcast. What prompted? I would say that it has been a long journey. Skewed percentage of women has been a concern for Pradhan for a long time. I would say in 2014, Pradhan actually formally instituted a scoping study to understand the reasons for the same. The struggles women go through for continuing in Pradhan, the areas of gaps, etc. So based on the findings, three major strategies were instituted. One is Women Caucus, to act as a support as well as a pressure group. Second is Gender Audit to all the work units at regular intervals, and developing a curriculum for the new entrants. And to integrate all these initiatives and call out organizational learnings, a steering group was formed in 2017. And based on the experience of various initiatives, the steering group worked on developing a comprehensive strategy to make Pradhan a better place for women, 2020-21, at that period of time. And in that strategy, because the strategy was made based on the insights we were getting in all those years from various initiatives, the importance of communication came up as a very important area. The way we communicate with external world and also within the organization says a lot about our stance towards gender equality and inclusion. And therefore, we started to work towards sensitizing ourselves about gender-sensitive communication and what is inclusive language and how to use that within the organization. And to formalize the organizational commitment and help, and to help the staff sensitizing themselves on this without feeling wronged or threatened, we decided to come up with a policy handbook, which will also include a toolkit. And for that, we sought help from Sudha and the Purpose Room, because this subject was new to us. We wanted to understand more about this, and therefore what can be done within the organization to change, improve the situation. So Sudha helped us in the journey to understand and also to come up with the toolkit. She helped us. I would request Sudha if you want to add anything.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Radha, for inviting us and giving us this opportunity to speak about this very important topic. You know, Parijat has just given the context for Pradhan, but we have to remember that there's a broader context. You know, the world that we are living in, you know, the constant flux, rising inequalities, rising costs of living, conflict, economic slowdown. And on the top of that, we are less than a decade away from the UN SDGs 2030 ambition, which is to achieve inclusive, people-centered and sustainable development where no one gets left behind, right? You know, this time is called the age of reporting or the age of action. Across the world, the third sector is essential to delivering on this ambition of countries and governments. And we can meet The third sector can meet this, help to meet this ambition only if itself it is inclusive, right? And if you look in the context in the past decade of where equity and inclusion are, these are not just like tick boxes. These are human rights issues, right? And if we talk about the third sector, you have to remember like the rest of the businesses, they are also under increasing scrutiny from their various stakeholders, whether they are governments, partners, donors, current and future employees, and all of them are scrutinizing, you know, whether the organizations are inclusive, both internally and externally. Do they practice fairness? Are they representative? So this is not a nice to have anymore, you know. It is not something to think about, like, you know, in the next management committee meeting. It is about business resilience. If the sector has to survive, and if it has to thrive, they have to, you know, take this approach. You know, it may surprise many of you to know that women's workforce participation has been steadily declining since 2010. Yeah. And it In 2021, it is at mere 19%. And why is this happening? Why are women getting squeezed out of the workforce or choosing to voluntarily quit? And this is not just across businesses. It is also true for the third sector, where we see poor representation both in leadership positions and, I think, above managerial positions. So you may be now thinking, where is the connect with gender-sensitive communications? You know, so women play such an important and integral role in society. Yet most of the time, you know, we use language that ignores or minimizes their contribution. Correct? How we speak, how we use words to communicate at home or in the workplace is dictated largely by our experiences. Right? How we were brought up, the media we consumed, how our parents, your schools or teachers, you know, all of those experiences. It also reflects wider socio-cultural norms, including roles that men, women and LGBTQ plus people play in society. And this, in turn, dictates people's attitudes on what is normal and acceptable. The good news is that, you know, culture and language are constantly evolving. We have seen that, you know, in our own lifetime, how much we have evolved and how much change there is. Some of it for good and some of it for bad. So what seems tough today will be the norm tomorrow. And language that can be used as a tool to challenge these stereotypes and foster inclusive culture can also change. You know, what the language that we were using in 1800s, you know, the English that was spoken then, Shakespeare in English is not spoken anymore, right? Nobody has a problem with that. So, and even if you look at, you know, the current language, you know, the SMS language or the emojis that we use while communicating, today they seem integral to how we communicate. So when we embarked on the journey to understand what gender-sensitive communications means for an organization like Pradhan, we wanted to create awareness about best practice and also understand how are we engaging with our internal and external stakeholders. What is our language? What are the words that we use, right? As an organization that works with women in some of the poorest regions of the country, how do we ensure that we are not unconsciously undermining women in the communities or showing superiority? And I'm sure Parijat will say that this is a challenge, you know, with words like beneficiaries. In the workplace, how are we ensuring that women and LGBTQ plus people feel seen, heard and listened to? Do we understand how the language is being used in the workplace is causing women not to seek promotions or to seek, you know, projects or seek, you know, to travel for a project or on some campaign? You know, it's, you so often hear this, abhi to inko inke bacche chote hain, so let her concentrate and let her be, you know, office based, or let her focus on this task that does not like mean that she gets on some important project. So the idea was to provide practical examples of real-life biases, gender-discriminatory language, and empower colleagues with useful tools. That is the most important thing. The core objective is to enable employees, communities, stakeholders to feel valued, respected, and have the confidence to speak up. Pradhan, as an organization, like Kanta Singh, the Deputy Country General of UN in India, she said that Pradhan has been a pioneer on so many things in this country and a torchbearer for a number of firsts in the social sector. So we also want Pradhan to lead by example on this, by walking the talk.
You pointed out one particular thing about how language has changed over the years, right? And every organization, for example, has an employee mix. How do you get diverse sets of people come together? How do you make sure that everybody is sensitized?
Radha, I totally agree about this generation gap and how language evolved, because, and also the upbringing, the way 20 years back people were brought up, and the new generation who are entering the organization right now, how they are brought up, those are different. And I totally agree that it is easier for the newer generation to adopt new things because the culture is very different from what it was in 20 years back. And what we did in the organization, the first and foremost, we thought the buy-in from the leadership is very important, because this is not a quote-unquote organizational output mandate. It is a change process that organization wants to take, and any change processes involves self-critiquing, and therefore it is difficult. So we were very sure that the leadership needs to be on board, and they need to promote that, pack up this agenda of making gender-sensitive communication within product. So we discussed the whole thing in the management and with the governing board, and around 70 colleagues with mixed experience, starting from 2 to 3 years of experience to 20 years of experience. We went through the sensitization workshops that Sudha conducted for us, and we tried to explore how unconscious biases impact the way we communicate, and what is gender-sensitive communication, and how the gender-sensitive or insensitive communication may impact the organizational culture. So we tried to do it in a mixed group, so that different people at various levels share their experience, and they listen to each other and understand that different perspectives and the struggle they go through. So I think that process was helpful. And after that, a group of 15 staff, this is also a mixed group, starting from 3 to 5 years of experience to 20, 22 years of experience, a group of 15 staff audited all the, not all, but from various organizational collaterals with the lens of gender-sensitive, inclusive communication, and listed down areas to be improved or modified. So this included project proposals, policies, personnel manual, articles we write, job announcements, all these. And based on that input, Sudha helped us in developing a simple handbook, which includes basic concepts, also some examples, and some do's and don'ts which can be understood and used by all. And after this handbook was prepared, it was again discussed with the leadership group, so that they are on board, they know what is the content. And with the help from our executive director, who is CEO of the organization, we actually put this handbook as an organization-wide policy handbook. Before that, we had two existing policy handbooks. One is personal manual, which is to be consulted and followed by all the work units, which articulates our personal policies. The second was the accounts manual, and this was launched as a third manual, which is to be followed by all the work units. And by work unit, we mean everybody in the team. So that probably will be helpful in a way that whatever we communicate internally or externally, people will refer to this handbook. And also, we are planning this financial year, we are planning to develop, for the all work units, we want to develop a kind of thought orientation or workshop kind of thing, which will help them to, the way we understood that internal, our biases and the impact of the of that, the way we communicate, it is understood by others. So the orientation will be focusing on that everybody, nobody feels threatened, because we all have our own acceptance of our own biases and the way we communicate, and therefore what are the changes we want to incorporate in our communication. So yes, I think these are some of the ways we try to balance out the generation gap, as well as how everybody can be part of the journey.
Now that this communication and the handbook and the toolkit is there, so how do you think that this can get to a larger adoption?
The first thing that I'd like to say is that we are still on that journey. Like Parijat says, any change process, requires internal scrutiny. And a lot of the work within that, some of it has been guided by international best practice. The frameworks we have looked at for the international best practice, because there hasn't been much around in the private sector. Very few. I mean, I think maybe one or two that we could count. So it is a journey, and we are, like Parijat mentioned, we are still going to go to a place where we are going to have an orientation session with the teams, and probably revise some of the language and revise some of the examples in that book. But I think at some point we would like to share it with the wider world, to use it as a sort of a foundation or a stepping stone for thinking about their own journey. And this is very, very critical for the future. One thing I'd like to say is that this is, you know, you're talking about generational, what do you say, values and generational communication challenges, etc. But then again, I'd like to urge caution in that, because there are people of my generation who are very inclusive, or who always thought about equity and inclusion as a starting point. And there are many people who are millennials and Gen Z who would not think that inclusion is a given, right? So it is not uniform, but following the practices that Parijat has mentioned, where you get a buy-in across the organization by involving them at various stages of building something like this, you will have better success of uptake. I would like to say that we are very proud of the journey, and I am particularly very, what do you say, grateful to Pradhan for having collaborated with me to, it has been a learning journey, but it is a learning that we are keen to share, and I think we would like to share it so that others can look at it and use it as a, what do you say, springboard. It's not a template, because every organization has to have its own. They have their own examples, they have their own stories, and they have their own language. I would like to urge caution on using language that is used internationally as a template to be used in India, or, you know, something that is in northern India to be used in southern India without thought, or without deep thought, actually. Because something that is acceptable over here may not be acceptable even in western India. It may not be acceptable in Mumbai. What is acceptable as a practice over in Delhi is not acceptable probably in Calcutta or in West Bengal, or what is acceptable in West Bengal is not acceptable in Jharkhand. So you have to think about who your communities are, who your internal stakeholders and external stakeholders are, and design the language. Essentially, like I'm saying, this is just, you can use this as a springboard, because it is about understanding that we all have biases, that we use language in a certain way because we are conditioned, or this has been our experience, right? We've been conditioned through from our childhood to the time we get into workplaces on using a certain language to talk about either men, women, LGBTQ plus people, or roles that people undertake. Okay, so I think that's the first thing to understand. That understand that why we use language, that we all have biases, and that need to be intentional in how we are speaking to people. I think if we think of these three things, then it would be easier for organizations or individuals to get on that journey. So you just, you know, think about, are you biased? Are you using stereotypes or discriminatory or sexist language? Then think carefully. Are you using gender neutral language or gender blind language? Because that is also not correct. And then think about how that other person may prefer to be communicated with. And of course, there are lots of examples of that. So this always has to be a journey, and it starts with an individual understanding that we are biased, that we are conditioned to use language in a certain way, and that we can all change. It is not difficult to do that. And it does not show us that we are wrong because we have been using a certain language, or we are right or superior because we are now using inclusive language. It means that more people need to get on that learning journey, that's all. But it is definitely possible.
That's true. And I just want to ask, Parijat, you were talking about it has taken you about a decade to arrive at where we are today. What are some of the highlights or insights that you got from the study?
The scoping study that actually helped us understand why the women percentage of women within the organization is skewed, even though we work with women in villages. So one of the insights were that the culture and the appreciation of quote-unquote masculine leadership in that culture is prevalent. It's not that you will be rewarded for something or not rebuked for something if you are feminine. But somehow there is a sense of appreciation when you behave in a certain way. And many of the women struggled because of that. And this organizational culture is like that. You cannot pinpoint what is exactly wrong or what is exactly right, but it is there. So organizational culture came up as a very important factor in that study, where you get a sense that what is appreciated, what is not appreciated, and in most of the cases, the masculine way of leadership is appreciated. Then again, if a women employee is very masculine, that is again not appreciated. So it's a very complex process. And through the caucus meetings, we also would come up with, understand the examples that how actually there could be two kinds of discrimination. One is very sexist, which is, clear sexism, where you can identify that, yes, this is wrong. And it is very clear. That is easier to deal with. You can confront directly. But there are way of benevolent sexism where you actually cannot pinpoint that what is wrong, but you feel that disturbance. For example, one of my colleagues may be very concerned about me being in the remote field at late at night, or me being alone in a particular area and wearing certain kind of dress. But I may not be, I being a female, may not be comfortable with those concerns. Those are unwanted. So these are the things wherein the colleague of mine is very trying to be helpful to me. So this benevolent sexism is basically difficult to deal with. And in Pradhan, we could identify that both these kinds of things exist. And through the gender audit, also, it was clarified that there are issues which are physical and hygiene related, and there are issues which are culture related. And in the second cycle of gender audit, we found that there is a huge improvement in the hygiene related, where the office spaces are clean, there are separate toilets, and all those things which you can see and you can do something about it very tangibly. So all those were improved visibly. But the second part, culture, it took a lot of time. I mean, it is still there, I would say. Because when we were going through the sensitization process, we could at least those, all of us who were involved in developing this toolkit, have could understand that we all have our own biases. And it's not that the way Sudha was sharing, that somebody is right and somebody is wrong. And we are unconscious about these biases. We are not very conscious. And therefore, this appreciation of all of us having unconscious biases which impact our communication, I would say the first and foremost realization we had as a group of people, group of colleagues who were working towards this and working to understand what the gender-sensitive communication is in our context. And we also tried to identify our personal biases and made attempts to alter those through conscious practices. As Sudha said, that nothing is written in concrete and it is possible to change if we are conscious. And during the audit process, we realized that we use many words or phrases which are apparently harmless, but actually non-intrusive or discriminatory, or comes up with a very strong masculine connotation. For example, we use poor to describe a section of people. However, what we mean is economically vulnerable. They may have a very rich culture or value system or broader worldview than many of us. we also realized that not only verbal or written communication, non-verbal communication plays a very important role. And gender plays a role in communication and its impact within the organization. Sensitization, some of the colleagues shared their examples on how in meetings the contribution from women colleagues go unnoticed. But when the same thing is told by a man, got attention. Almost all women taking up leadership roles struggle to get acceptance from the team. And if they are assertive, they are told to be dominating. And if they are timid, they are told not to be suitable for playing such roles. So some of the, and there's a long list. So these are some of the things which I thought I could share as example. And probably this will also vary context-wise. The work in progress, the toolkit is as of now work in progress document, as Sudha said, and we are expecting that as we do the orientation and interaction with the teams, more context-specific examples will come up, which will help us to revisit the handbook and include more contextual and context-specific examples of non-inclusive language that we use. Yes, and adding to what Sudha said about the broader circulation of this handbook in the earlier question, the work in progress handbook is up in Pradhan's website and that can be accessed by anybody right now. We also shared the handbook with our Pradhan alumni group and many of them are working in various different organizations. Some of them have their own or established their own organization. So that is one way we thought that we could actually spread the word and the importance of being conscious about the inclusive communication.
I would just like to add one or two things to, you know, the very detailed and very well-articulated response that Parijat has just given, is that one thing that we are talking about is gender sensitive, and in the context of Pradhan, we were talking generally about women. But this is true if you adopt, if you're truly inclusive and you adopt the practices, this is true for men and women plus LGBTQ plus people. Because if you start becoming inclusive to women, suddenly you are not going to, you know, be difficult with other group, other non-binaries. And I think some of the learning was that a lot of men at Pradhan who are quieter or who are supportive of women or their partners or their wives were called, said to have feminine attributes. And they shared those examples. So that was like, oh wow, you know, this is what people have to go to if they are supportive of their spouses or if they are, you know, if they are standing up for their colleague. That you are, you know, you're behaving like a girl or you're being fed to the thing feminine or to not masculine enough in your response or how you behave. And Parijat mentioned something, another thing that she mentioned about women where they have this double bind, you know, where you try to behave, emulate or imitate leaders who are predominantly male. And they get caught out because then other people call them aggressive or bitch or, you know, you are quieter and you're trying to be who you are. And they say that you're actually, you don't show leadership qualities because you're too quiet and people don't listen to you. Because we are still, why we are too, you know, we are in a time where we are talking about inclusive leadership and empathetic leadership, which are all feminine traits. Our workplaces, and our people who work in those workplaces still are used to it. It's in our DNA. You know, we have the experience of thinking that leadership is all about the male traits, which is about aggression, which is about extra confidence, which is about, you know, working 24/7, which is about being available all the time, and which is about being assertive to a point where you actually bully people into doing things. So I think those were very interesting learnings. And there was, I have never seen such a huge undertaking where so many of the employees, I think everyone who wanted to share a point of view was enabled to share their point of view. And they did share their point of view. I think what the team orientation is going to do, it's going to dig down deeper into it and really, really embed, help to embed you know, the change that we are trying to see.
Thanks a lot for your time. It was great having you guys.